You are listening to The National Pulse with Ashraf Garda.
If you've been following the news from a global perspective, you'll know there's been protests, there's been widespread protests, student-led protests, on the issue of that war, the battle Israel and Palestine. And in this case, you have the protests mainly from supporters of the Palestinian cause. But it's to a level that I understand some campuses have even had to shut down. So it begs certain questions about the power that these students or these protesters have and the implications maybe going into an election year in the USA. Brooks Spector with us. He's the associate editor at the Daily Maverick. Brooks, it's been a while. Good chatting to you. Hi.
Welcome to having come back on the air.
Well, yes. Thank you very much. Right. Brooks, what do you make? I mean, what's your understanding, firstly, of the lay of the land there? What's happened?
Well, I mean, let's begin by an understanding that this is these protests are substantial, but they are not, at least not so far, at the level of the protest that that I would remember from anti-Vietnam War days, where there would be literally hundreds of thousands of people would gather at certain protests. There were occasional people who actually died in the protests, and we'll get to this in a second, it had an enormous impact on the Democratic Party's nominating convention in Chicago in 1968, where the protest ranged through the entire time of that particular convention and probably led to the almost inevitable defeat of then-nominee Hubert Humphrey. These protests are taking place on a range of campuses. I think if my counting is right, it's about 20 campuses so far. Most of the time, they have been gatherings of several hundred people. Some of them have been encampments on green spaces on the campuses with camping tents set up. And in some cases, there have been other and more vociferous protests outside the campuses or near to it. Mm. One of the problems in trying to judge these protests is trying to understand how many of the people engaged in the protest are actually students at the university concerned, or have they come from other parts of the city to join in? And of course, nobody really knows. In a couple of cases, there have been campus police checking student IDs and escorting people who quite clearly were not students back off the campus and so forth. And there have been some people arrested. I think the number, and I'm guessing here, let me go back to my numbers here. In one case in Boston, near Emerson College, there have been about 100 people arrested. And I suspect that many of those people who have been arrested will be released, within a day, because the kind of charges that can be brought are fairly minor. But the political implications and repercussions could be substantial, because for the Democrats and for Joe Biden, the president and nominee for re-election, they point to the precariousness and the danger of his nomination with groups of people, especially younger people, whose support for or sympathy to Israel has been in sharp decline over the last, certainly the last 6 to 8 months, but gradually over the last several years. And if that's the case, many of those people will probably, they certainly aren't going to go vote for Donald Trump, but what they may well do is decide that they're going to simply sit home, not vote. Mm. And if they don't vote, then the thin margin of victory that Joe Biden would hope for becomes ever more precarious.
Which then gets me thinking, Brooks, that, is this likely to be an election issue? And you can answer this in one go. The second part of it is, it's not so much about the election. It's yet another example of civil society picking up a cause on university campuses, in the streets of cities, and effectively driving the cause because the leadership of a country is not doing that? And how significant is that?
Well, one of the things that we need to keep in mind is that if you read the survey data about what is most important to people who are registered voters and who say they will be voting, it is, in fact, not foreign affairs, foreign policy issues at all. It's immigration, which kind of arguably is a foreign policy issue because it deals, obviously, with people coming into the U.S. mostly from the southern border, but not Mexicans for the most part anymore. It's immigration and the dreaded word inflation, a cost of living. Those, at least at this moment, among the majority of voters, those appear to be the primary issues, the primary drivers. It's fairly rare for a foreign policy issue, even a particularly emotive one like this one, that takes pride of place among voters. But we can, if we narrow it down, and if we, you know, if we take our microscope and we look more carefully at the way voting takes place, among some people, a foreign policy issue, in this case, Israel, Palestine, Gaza, is enough probably to drive some of those voters to simply choose not to vote, not to support Joe Biden, who would ordinarily be the candidate they would likely prefer, and simply not vote or vote for one of the much more minor third, fourth, fifth party candidates if they choose to vote.
And perhaps that, as we I'm going to leave it at that, Brooks, my apology, we're on to news time, but perhaps the issue to consider as we wrap up is these protests, do they have the clout, if not today, but moving forward, to be able to change American, and I mean American specifically, public opinion with regards to Palestine and Israel? It's an ongoing issue, and you know those opinions have been divided for many, many years in that neck of the woods. Brooks Spector, thanks for your time. Associate Editor at the Daily Maverick. Let's get